The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Good Monday morning, everyone. Welcome into Morning Invest, the only progressive business show on the interwebs with live viewer feedback right here on the show. So thank you so much for subscribing and smashing that little bell notification so you'll notice when we go live every day at 9 a.m. Eastern time. We've got a busy, busy show for you today. There is no shortage of news on this Monday. This is like the last week of work before everyone goes home for Christmas. Well, unless Congress doesn't get its act together, and then we're going to demand that they stay a little bit longer to get some work done. But right now, this is a crazy week. So we're going to go through the latest on the stimulus. We are going to see a stimulus today. A stimulus bill will happen today. So if you've been watching a lot of those other like clickbait YouTubers out there who've said, finally, stimulus bill here, approved, Trump signs, over the past number of weeks, that was all clickbait and fake news, of course. Today, though, a bipartisan group of senators will be rolling out this stimulus bill, and we will talk all about it and what is expected. And it's breaking news. I'm watching a lot of the different reporters that I follow on this story with some different tidbits and pieces. So we will piece it all together for you right here on the show. Also, one of Trump's biggest billionaire supporters, he's the richest landlord. He's the biggest landlord in the United States, has been boasting about raising rents during the pandemic. Tell you about the outrage on that story. Mitch McConnell is being blamed for a whole host of issues holding up these stimulus negotiations. We're going to hear from AOC, who took to her Instagram Live to eviscerate Mitch over the past 24 hours. And guess what? The vaccine is rolling out today. Yes, it has hit the road in a big truck going out to over 100 different distribution facilities for those who are most in need of it right now. 3 million doses hitting the road. So it's official after the FDA approved the coronavirus vaccine from Pfizer. So all of that and more on the show today. G-Dog is here, as my little girl calls him. Where's G-Dog? Grover is over in the bright sun where he likes to be warming himself, sunning himself. Producer David in the control booth. And good morning to you. I hope you had a good weekend. And by the way,
good morning.
Yeah, there was the great Google outage today. So YouTube was down. So we apologize. We're trying to get comments up on the screen today, and I guess that screwed everything up. Couldn't get into your Gmail if you relied on Gmail. I was trying to check my email this morning. I was like, what's going on?
Well,
it's amazing. it's amazing how reliant we are on this stuff, you know?
It is. I was trying. That's what I was saying, because I told you, you're like, hey, I'm in. I don't see you. I was trying on the other computer to get YouTube set up, and I couldn't connect. And it kept saying error. It said too many failed attempts. And I was like, what? I only tried once. So that's why I was like, I had to update, because I was like, I didn't know what was going on. And I didn't know there was an outage.
Yeah. Big outage worldwide. So, yeah, it was not good. But, hey, good thing it happened before, like, the official work day. But I mean, look, cyber attacks, you know, there's been a number of brokerages that have been attacked over the weekend. People having their digital assets stolen, Bitcoin stolen. Bitcoin funds have been stolen. Of course, the U.S. Treasury Department was hacked over the weekend. Yeah, the U.S. Treasury hacked by Russian hackers. And brokerage accounts worldwide being broken into. It's got to make you feel good about like the future of like digital currency and moving away from gold and silver. That's why I always say, like, you know, real estate, gold and silver, having actual assets that people, some Russian hacker can't just go in and take from you. But that's a reality this weekend. And you realize how reliant we are on that. So hope everyone's digital assets are safe. You want to cover your digital assets, okay? Make sure that you're safe. All right, let's get to it. This morning, we got a lot of stimulus news to get to. So breaking news just a short time ago, we now know that according to discussions from Nancy Pelosi and the Senate, there will be a new bipartisan Senate group that's releasing its $908 billion coronavirus bill today with this weird likely twist to it. This was Burgess Everett breaking this news over at Politico. Two pieces. It will be broken into two pieces. There'll be a $748 billion piece with a less controversial spending, and then there'll be a $160 billion piece that'll have the state and the local and the liability, because they're too wimpy to put it all together. So they're going to break it apart, and they're going to try to pass them separately. That's the latest here, and let's go through what this looks like. Here is, let's see, pull up Politico here. Here is, let me get my notes up here, sorry here. Got 30 different fields open today because there's so many different moving parts on this. So let's go through it. The divided measure could make it more likely that it's going to pass. A bipartisan group of senators led by Joe Manchin, Mitt Romney, and others are breaking this apart because they just think that this is not going to pass if state and local and liability coverage are inside of one package. There's enough discord among House representatives and the Senate that do not want state and local on the Republican side, and Democrats absolutely do not want liability insurance. So why is this so controversial? Well, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, I think, put it very nicely, succinctly. Why is this a problem? Like, why would Democrats not want to support liability insurance or liability protection for businesses? Like, what's the big holdup here, right? We could get a $1,200 check only if Democrats would just go along and allow businesses to get off the hook, not having to take care of their workers anymore. You know, they'd have a 5-year protection. Okay, what's the big deal? I think she lays it out perfectly in this little live Instagram live that she did where she eviscerates Mitch McConnell on this very issue.
CDC guidelines. So what Mitch McConnell said is that we want to give big corporations total immunity for 5 years from COVID-related lawsuits. Now, if we do that, if we accept that for a one-time $1,200 check or a super short expansion of unemployment insurance, the deal is that you're going to end up behind. Because you may get one $1,200 check on one hand, but you may also get a multi-million dollar hospital bill with no recourse and no ability to protect yourself from a negligent corporation or employer.
Makes sense. So when you see it in those terms, when you understand that you're being asked to go into an environment at work, you've had your hours cut, but you need this job, okay? The company is asking you to come to work, and the environment that they've created is not conducive to protecting its employees against COVID. On a day when we're now seeing vaccines rolling out and numbers are absolutely startling this morning, we could, by the end of the show, hit this number. So here's a live, this is a live look at the Johns Hopkins number I pulled right before the show here. You can see the U.S. death toll at 299,000. Drudge Report, here's their front page this morning. It's going to hit 300,000 by the end of today. 300,000 deaths. Well over 3,000. 3,000 deaths a day now. I mean, more than a 9/11, more than a Pearl Harbor every day in the United States. So the amount of people that are spreading this in environments where you know, even if people are taking precautions with masks, it only takes like a handful of people not wearing masks where this thing is being spread like crazy. And it's look how many people it's killing. I said, like, by the end of today's show, that number could hit that 300,000 deaths in America. And so Mitch McConnell holding firm on that 5-year protection for these businesses. 5-year protection for that business, for businesses. And what's remarkable is that Yahoo Finance pulled some different donors, and it's remarkable. Like, why is he holding firm on this? Well, Yahoo Finance pulled some, Yahoo News pulled a bunch of different donor sheets to see who was donating to Mitch McConnell's campaign. Why? Why would they be, why would they want that? Why does he want this protection? And sure enough, you just go down this big donors list and it's all big corporations. All big corporations that are like Tyson Chicken, all these that don't want to have to deal with these types of protections for its citizens, for its workers. So a 5-year protection, so you don't have, you don't get to sue them if you get sick, but you have to go to this job. So now this is going to be broken out. So let's go through how this could unfold. One of these pieces of these two bills would be a $748 billion piece of the coronavirus relief with less controversial items like schools and healthcare. The other would marry that $160 billion money for local governments and a temporary liability shield. Those two components, of course, have been the sort of the red line back and forth right now. Senator Bill Cassidy also, he's a Republican. He's been pushing for state and local aid. So there, there are a number of Republicans who want state and local aid. Again, I don't know how we're making the sort of moral equivalency between these two things. State and local aid leads directly to getting vaccines out to people, as the Wall Street Journal is reporting this morning. Look at this. Getting COVID vaccines to people will cost states billions that they don't have. The federal government is providing the vaccine, along with the syringes, the needles, the face masks, and the shield. But state leaders say they must hire medical workers, provide community outreach and education, set up vaccination clinics, ensure storage capacity for vaccines. Some states are also concerned with having enough supplies, such as gloves and gowns, to protect their healthcare workers. Officials in several states say they would spend whatever is needed to get residents vaccinated. Some said, though, that this might force spending cuts in areas like education. That's what we need to do, because our schools are doing so great, aren't they? So let's cut education. I got an idea. Here's another idea. Why don't we cut school lunch programs for low-income Americans? What about that? That'll save some money, right? Why don't we cut the food stamps program? You know, we're Scrooge when you need them. They don't have storage facilities for these vaccines. They have to be built. How do you get a storage facility where you have to keep it at 70 degrees below zero? I mean, if I asked David, like, hey, this afternoon, like, you and I are the only two people in the world left, like, there was a whole, I need you, it, for our survival, you have to build a storage facility that can keep things at 70 degrees below zero. Can you do it?
Could you imagine the technology alone to create that temperature?
Right. I couldn't. My friend Andy and I growing up, we always would say, gosh, could you imagine if the world relied on us to get stuff done? Like, if, he's like, can you imagine, like, if someone said, hey, Andy, you got to go out and build a road. Be like, how the hell do I build a road? Like, how do I make cement? You know, like, you're going to rely on us to do that stuff?
You ever see Joe Rogan's stand-up comedy where he talks about, like, when, like, cell phones, like, if we lost that technology, like, we'd be, like, people walking out of caves. Like, who, he said, how would we know how to recreate that? Like, we couldn't recreate that technology.
No. No, if we took, like, all the books, we got rid of all of that. Like, there was, like, the Dark Ages again, like the big fires, you know, and all of the texts are burned. We didn't know. Be like, Clayton, do you know how to, can you build a computer? Like, no. I know how to use a computer. Clayton, can you build a storage facility that can keep things at 70 degrees below zero? It'll save humanity.
I got a can of Freon.
I don't know. Right. I have some of those ice packs, you keep sandwich meat cold. Will that help? Can I throw one of those little things in, you take to the beach? So all of this stuff needs to be built. All of this stuff needs to be created. And these states are bleeding money right now. And so this whole argument over state and local aid is a canard. It's ridiculous. Every dose is already paid for, according to the White House. The syringes, the needles, everything, the swabs, everything, but they don't have the infrastructure to get it out to everyone. He said, the White House said, we are providing the dry ice with the vaccines for cold storage. And the states need billions, they say. According to the National Association of Governors and the Territorial Health Officers, they need upwards of $9 billion for the vaccination program alone in Pennsylvania. Just in Pennsylvania, they need $9 billion to get these things out. So this, again, this BS moral equivalency between liability protection for your big money corporate donors, Mitch McConnell, and getting state and local funding out to people is absurd. So what else is in this thing? So Joe Manchin earlier on Sunday said that this bill would be out today. He promised it. He said, look, not everyone's going to get what they want. There's going to have to be compromise. This is, you know, this is an emergency spending bill to get us through until Biden takes over.
Still the holdup. Well, the spirit of compromise is this. Everybody's not going to get what they want. We can get something we could all live with, but we're putting a product forward. It's going to go forward with both, with everything. Hopefully in it, you'll see a complete bill tomorrow before the end of the day. Well, then you can choose if you like it or not. Vote for it or vote against it. Look at the good it does as a whole, not an individual piece. There's nobody that wants a business to be litigated out of business. They're going to be tough enough just surviving. On the other hand, we don't want to throw caution to the wind that the businesses aren't safe places to work, the workers not protected, and the people that go to patronize these places of businesses are not in a safe environment. We have to take all that in consideration, do the best we can. I remind you this, it's for a short period of time. A short period. We're not changing the tort laws forever. We're just trying to get through an emergency period of time.
Drew Hamill, who is the Nancy Pelosi's spokesperson, said that they've continued to speak for hours with Steven Mnuchin, trying to hammer through different pieces of this legislation. The Speaker and Secretary Mnuchin spoke by phone at 4:30 to discuss the latest developments. They spoke for approximately 30 minutes. The Speaker believes at a time when the virus is surging that the need for state and local funding is even more important, especially given the state's responsibility for distributing and administering the vaccine. And that goes right in line with the Wall Street Journal's reporting, the conservative Wall Street Journal's reporting on the states that are bleeding capital and don't have the money or infrastructure in order to get this out. Further, Drew Hamill talks about in these tweets that, let me just scroll down here a little bit, that the speaker, healthcare workers and first responders are risking their lives to save lives at the same time and are at risk of losing their jobs without state and local support. And this is happening as they're having to cut back. Right. I mean, this is the thing. You really want to cut back workers right now? The speaker reiterated her view that a compromise on the liability issue should be found that does not jeopardize workers' safety. She says on the omnibus spending bill, which is the government opening, the speaker raised the recent bipartisan bicameral agreement on surprise billing and the bipartisan support for its inclusion in the omnibus spending agreement. What that is that you can't be surprise billed from hospitals. And there's bipartisan support, and the president has said, President Trump has said he will sign that part of it as well. So no more surprise billing would be included in this. That's great news for a lot of people. But I wish one thing would be included in here, which is, as we mentioned last night on the show, how many people are receiving letters in the mail now letting them know that they need to now send back their unemployment benefits that they've received. That these pandemic unemployment assistance, where people were paid and gotten money, now they receive checks because the government sent them to them. They're now receiving a letter saying, hey, you owe us, you got to send $8,000 back to us. At a time when these people have already spent it on rent and groceries. You know, they're not going out buying PlayStations. And even if they were, the government made this mistake during a pandemic. And by the way, our entire economy is run on, you know, our GDP is reliant on consumer spending. So if in some ways that employs people, right, that work at the Best Buy, that work, you know, that employs the people that are making the PlayStations. So not that that's the worst thing in the world, but people are using it on rent and groceries. And to get a surprise letter in the mail like that, it's terrifying. I wish that was part of this legislation. Like, hey, if we screwed up, you know, like Monopoly board, right? Bank error in your favor. Collect $10, you know? Don't ask for it back. And that's what they're doing. So Democrats say, look, we're not going to get everything we want. We think that state and local aid is important. And if we can get what we want, we get it. But we don't want to get aid out to people who are really, really struggling. We want to get aid out to people and are at grave risk. We need to get the essential pieces done. We have time to get stuff done that we didn't include because we couldn't get political. We will have time later to get other things done. But we need to get the most vital items out and done as soon as possible. You know, Chuck Schumer just saying a short time ago, the good news on the negotiations is that the Gang of Eight is working hard. They hope to have something as early as this morning. It's not everything we all want, but it's a good framework. I hope everyone can come together around the Gang of Eight. But the question remains, I don't see anything in here in the latest data this morning about stimulus checks. So no stimulus checks. How is that going to sit with people like Bernie Sanders, who have said we absolutely must have stimulus checks or we're going to hold this place hostage? I mean, once again, taking to the Senate floor, making that message known that he and Josh Hawley are saying we have to have stimulus checks in here where Americans are hurting right now. Those who qualify plus $500 for their children, $1,200 for a single person and $2,400 for a family that needs to be included in here. Will he go along with it with the promise of more later? I mean, it's going to be interesting to watch what Bernie Sanders does over the next short amount of time here this afternoon. I'm going to be watching that closely. We'll have more on this in just a second. I want to tell you about our friends at BetterHelp. You know, everyone needs someone to talk to right now. And I have a family member actually, or an extended family member, who's gone through some difficult times and said, you know, I just need someone to talk to. Like, really anxious, like a lot of anxiety, whether you're trapped at home right now, having to do homeschooling, all of that. Our friends at BetterHelp are doing some amazing stuff. They will allow you to speak to an actual therapist, either via text message, on the phone, via Zoom call, whatever you like. Professional, licensed, vetted counselors right at your disposal. And you don't have to create some sort of a long-term experience with that. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. They're going to assess your needs, match you with your own licensed professional therapist. They have a broad range of expertise. Anything you can, you know, that you need help with, just to talk to them. And the good news is you're going to get access right now just for trying it out. You're going to get 10% off your first month if you go to betterhelp.com/invest. And you can do it right from the comfort of your own home. You don't have to go anywhere. You can log into your account anytime, send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses that you can schedule weekly video phone sessions. You won't ever have to sit like in an uncomfortable office with white noise on and wondering if who's listening. Schedule it right when you need it, right from your phone. So go to betterhelp.com and check them out right now. Betterhelp.com. Did I have the proper URL up there?
Betterhelp.com/invest.
That's right. Betterhelp.com/invest. So our thanks to them. We got some new data out this morning on what happens when people can't pay their student loans and questions as to, you know, some pieces of this stimulus, by the way, will attack the student loan debt. We hope that was in the original proposals. We'll learn more about this bill this afternoon, and I will do a full report on what's in the bill as soon as it's released today. So I will have all the details for you. But we're getting some data on the student loans, and it's really, really troubling. And who's carrying the most debt right now? The average student loan amounts by age. These are in billions, okay? So take a look at your screen. 24 and younger carry $115 billion in outstanding student loan debt. 24 to 34, $500 billion. This whole chart adds up to $1.7 trillion in student loan debt. 35 to 49-year-olds have the most, at $601 billion. And look at that. I'm stunned. 50 to 61-year-olds account for $262 billion. You're in your 50s and you still have that much student loan debt? I mean, this just goes to show you what an absolute disaster this system is. This number, though, floored me. I thought, okay, 50s, that's even bad. Look at the 60s. When you're in your 60s, they're $86 billion. Still in debt. This is a broken system, which is why there is renewed push for President Biden, or President-elect Biden, to wipe away all student loan debt. Chuck Schumer, Elizabeth Warren, and others are pushing him on day one through executive action to remove all student loan debt. There would be student loan assistance in this bipartisan bill, so at least some help could be there for student loans. There'll be rental assistance and other things, but to have this completely wiped away is absolutely needed, because this is a joke. I mean, it's a disaster at this point that the average student loan by age, starting around average tuition prices, are $22,000 and climbing, even higher for private schools and those with graduate degrees. $1.7 trillion, according to the Federal Reserve. Most of them, you know, in their mid-30s. 35 to 49. They increased their debt load last year by $45 billion. That's how much they upped their debt load last year. Much of this new debt is from 800,000 parents who borrowed the Parent Plus loans to help send their kids to college. And they simply can't afford it, but they want to give their kids a better life than what they had. So lower income families are saddled with more debt than anyone else. And if you're stuck with these loans until you're 60, how do you ever hope to get ahead? Imagine having albatross. You get 40 years later, you still have this albatross of student loan debt on your head. Let me know in the chat below. Let me know in the comments. How many of you, like, are in your 40s, still have student loan debt? I remember when I was at Fox, one of our meteorologists, he had just turned 50, and he just paid off his student loans to be a meteorologist. I thought, my God, 50 and you're just paying off your student loan? It's debilitating. In 2019, a new study from New York Life polled 2,200 adults about their financial mistakes. And most of them say paying off their student loans was their biggest financial mistake. 18 and a half years to pay off their student loans it was taking when they started at 26 years old, ended at 45 years old. Horrendous. We got to fix this. And one way to do it is to start fresh and then not put a Band-Aid on it by wiping all the student loan debt away, but then again, putting in place a system for free public college. So yes, eliminating it, fresh slate, and then starting fresh with free public college for all who want it. Give access to those that they could really go but couldn't afford it otherwise in this country, who wouldn't want to take on that debt. And now they have the opportunity to go to college. It would be transformative, I think. I'd love to hear your thoughts about it. Drop me a comment in the field below. You know, I think if these kids are so far behind, there's no way for them to really ever get caught up. And as we look at someone who's in their 60s, is still paying it off. That's all the evidence you need right there. I'm stunned by the 50 to 61-year-olds still with $262 billion. Unbelievable. Another piece of news that's been floating around, and you know, I think we're going to see more about this today. Once we get this bipartisan bill, President Trump saying that he wants more money, bigger than what Democrats and Republicans want. You know, we've heard him say this over and over again, but he's saying it again yesterday, that he wants more money in the form of stimulus checks for the American people and would support that. So will we see a standalone Bernie Sanders direct stimulus check bill with Senator Josh Hawley that the president would sign and could get bipartisan agreement that's not part of this $908 billion plan? Bernie Sanders saying, I'm going to bring it, or Josh Hawley saying, I'm going to bring it to the floor of the Senate. If it's not here, we will bring it to the floor of the Senate. You know, AOC mentioning that Mitch McConnell doesn't want to do that. He has any interest in bringing stimulus checks to the floor of the American people, to the floor of the Senate.
And so that's not worth it, right? Your check is not worth your life. And so what we need to do is talk them down from that, right? But let me be very clear that where we're at right now is that some Republicans, and frankly, I just think it's sad where it's like, why do you need to get something for helping your constituents? Why do we need to exchange people's well-being and ability to survive for yet another corporate bailout after we already, by the way, passed a $4 trillion leveraged fund for Wall Street in March? So let's talk about the math here, because y'all got a $1,200 check. Wall Street got $4 trillion in access to liquid funds. And
not exactly the same thing, is it? And they're continuing to get bailed out, because in this new proposal, it would plenty of money for businesses once again as part of this package. And if liability protection is in there, boy, these companies get everything they want. A big, fat, wet kiss. Now they're getting money, plus they get liability protection so they don't have to get sued. They can do whatever they want. They've already eroded. How many workers' rights are we going to erode in 1 year? Just keep doing it. The worker gets screwed once again. No recourse to you. Meanwhile, President Trump was interviewed yesterday on Fox and Friends and was asked about the election. A lot of news, of course, today. Today in Georgia is the runoff election. It begins. Early voting in Georgia starts today. All eyes on those two races down there for the January 5th final vote on January 5th. Today is also the day that the electors are certified. The Electoral College is certified, and President-elect Biden becomes official. President-elect Biden becomes officially today. And there's a lot of people reporting saying that watch what happens with President Trump after President Biden or Biden becomes president-elect. That's when the things are going to start to kick into real high gear for wanting to call fraud on this election. So he was asked about the election, and he continued foisting his ridiculous claims after the Supreme Court refused to hear the Texas case. And multiple judges around the country of all political stripes have thrown these things out, dismissed with a lack of evidence. The president continued to spin his yarn about this was the most fraudulent election in history without any evidence.
Now, in Washington, for that, do you worry about the country being divided as if it goes to inauguration and they still feel that way and you still feel that way?
No, I worry about the country having an illegitimate president. That's what I worry about.
That's really what you worry about. You're not really worried about your media company. So you're continue to push this BS that you won the election so that you can continue to raise money and get yourself out of debt. That's all this is. Open up your eyes. That's all this is.
A president that lost, and lost badly. This wasn't like a close election. You look at Georgia. We won Georgia big. We won Pennsylvania big. We won Wisconsin big. We won it big.
But your guys,
we won all of these states.
But do you think your legal team has proven that?
Well, we never get a chance to prove it because...
You never get a chance to prove it? How many different lawsuits have you filed with no evidence? How many different hearings have you had in front of judges where when those lawyers went in to sit in front of the judge and the judge then asked, you're not alleging fraud? No, but it's good. You can talk about it ahead of time. But then when you actually get in front of a judge and you have to prove fraud, you couldn't do it.
The judge will say, well, I'm sorry, you don't have standing. Like, how about me? Texas and all of these states, 18 or 19 altogether, they come in. Think how nice that is. Where they actually come in and they say, we want to support you, sir, because you're important to this country. We want to support you. They go in and they say, the states don't have standing and I don't have. I'm president of the United States. I just got 75 million votes. The biggest number of votes in the history of our country ever gotten by a sitting president. I went from 63 million to 75 million, a 12 million vote difference. That's the biggest margin in history. They say if I got 67, the smartest people in the business, if I got 67 million votes, I couldn't lose. I got 75 million and they say I lost. I didn't lose. The election was rigged.
By who?
By the Democrats, and actually, interestingly, by the Democrats, but by local Democrats, meaning state Democrats.
So the beauty with that argument is that the amount of, I mean, that would be easy to prove, right? If you're going to say that there is collusion among all of these local municipalities, and that's the reason this is such garbage, is because all of these little municipalities operate independently. There is not one national election. They're all run by local precincts, right? They would all have to be in cahoots, orchestrating the biggest coup in American history, in world history, right? It would have to have done so in secret, better than the Manhattan Project for that to be pulled off somehow. And there's no evidence of it. So Chris Christie was on show yesterday, former governor of New Jersey, Republican, longtime ally of President Trump. And he went off the rails. Well, he didn't really go off the rails. He's saying President Trump's going off the rails. And this is absolutely absurd, and called BS on this whole fraud claim. Listen to Chris Christie.
So I'm going to start with you. You have said numerous times the president should just end his quest to overturn the election results, but he continues to dispute it, with 60% of Republicans in the House supporting that Texas case. What's your message to the Republicans?
Well, listen, the legal theory put forward by his legal team and by the president is an absurdity. And the reason why the Supreme Court didn't take it is because it's an absurd idea to think that any state or any number of states, no matter how good they are, can challenge another state's right to run the election as they see fit. And also, there's no evidence. As I've been saying since election night, show us the evidence. And what's gotten even worse, though, Martha, I think, is the attacks by the president on good, hardworking, decent Republican governors. And you've seen his attitude towards these folks change. And let's think about why. You know, back in September, he said about Doug Ducey, Doug is tough, Doug is strong, Doug is a good governor, the Arizona governor. He said about Brian Kemp back in the summer, that Brian is a capable man, he knows what he's doing, and he's done a very good job as governor. Now, after the election is over and he lost Arizona and Georgia, he says they're rhinos that are working harder against him. He's calling them corrupt and also telling people things that aren't true. You know,
so Chris, what happens
to your party? He's talking about signature verification. Listen, you know, Martha's going to be have people are going to have to stand up and start to say these things. I mean, you know, the fact is in Georgia, and people should know this, that signature verification, which the president continues to tweet about, has been done twice in this election. It was done when the application for a mail-in ballot was sent in, and it was done when that mail-in ballot was ultimately sent in. And Governor Kemp has said this. The lieutenant governor has said it. The secretary of state has said it. And so, you know, it's gone. The reason the Supreme Court is not taking this is not because of a lack of courage. It's for the same reason that every court has thrown this out. It's a lack of evidence and a lack of any type of legal theory that makes any sense. And the worst part, though, is attacking these guys like Brian Kemp, Doug Ducey, and others who are following the Constitution and executing the oath that they took.
That's the very latest on the election front. This afternoon, of course, the certification will happen, and Biden will go from being a presumptive president-elect to president-elect officially with those electors. Of course, there is still this legal challenge that could unfold at the beginning of January, trying to go around and lay claim to these electors. A number of Republicans are now signing on to that, which is legislation going after them. We wrote about it in today's newsletter. By the way, how many of you are subscribers to our newsletter? It's totally free, delivered to your inbox first thing in the morning. You can read it over a cup of coffee at morninginvest.com. And we wrote about it in the newsletter this morning. So these legal challenges are not done. And the reason they're not done, because anyone with a brain understands that if you give up and you say, we're done with this now, we're giving up our fight, we're done, then no one's going to continue to donate money to you, right? You can't continue to have these rallies. You can't continue to be out there trying to raise money and making all of this money right now. So you're hamstringing yourself. He is $500 million in debt, is President Trump. And by having you already donate $300 million to him, he's already raised $300 million, which he's claiming is being used to fight the election results. And under his super PAC, he has carte blanche to do with that money. He can live his life now, thanks to these donations, paying off legal debt, and also having to deal with all of the legal battles he's going to have when he gets out, particularly in New York, in the Southern District of New York, in the civil suits, and then, of course, at the state level from Letitia James in New York for tax fraud, all of these things. I feel so badly for the people that are donating money to this. They don't see it. They don't understand what he's doing. It's incredibly frustrating. I mean, there's zero merit. If there was, like, if any of these judges, Republican judges, if the Supreme Court thought there was merit, you know, look at the Supreme Court. Half these people now have been appointed by Trump, and the Supreme Court won't even hear it. And there's no merit. Baseless claims with zero evidence from the highest court in the land. Give it up already. But he's not going to, and he's going to continue to talk about trying to run in 2024, and he's going to continue to raise money. That way people will donate money to him, think he's their great savior, and they will fund his lifestyle. And it's really, really sad to see people doing this. I get so bummed about it. Grover gets really pissed off about it too. We don't like having people get, you know, have been taken advantage of, do we, Grover?
Wow, look at that. He is seething.
Look at him. That's seething right there.
See how that wind ears
so
down?
All these yeah, it's like a little windmill. It's like a little weather vane. So, you know, there were some more Trump rallies this weekend. There was one in Philly. There was, others again, trying to raise awareness about voter fraud, all of this stuff. And, of course, at the rally that we saw the other day, you know, my favorite rally, was this one.
Girls. Oh gosh. Here, vote Where's for Trump. Mute? This is a disaster, vote but we're fun. We don't care if you're girls. Don't care if you're dudes.
Vote for Trump.
Oh. Heck, you could be both.
Vote for Trump.
Grover's like, what is that crap? Please stop. Please stop. He literally woke up by hearing that, I think.
It's up to you.
Vote for Trump.
We don't care if you're a man.
Vote for Trump.
Women's soccer team.
Oh, my God. Anyway, at that rally, I think it was at that rally, you know, where you had MyPillow guy. So this is all the grifters that are tying themselves to Trump right now, trying to make money. They're all trying to get some of this action right now. All these poor Americans right now that are mailing in money. All these grifters are taking advantage of you. So the MyPillow guy was there, Mike Lindell, and he gave a speech. And, you know, we kept hearing from Sidney Powell, Trump's attorney, that we're going to unleash the Kraken, right? The Kraken, which is like what? Is a Kraken like a giant mythical water beast or something? Right?
Yes.
Isn't that supposed to be we're going to unleash the Kraken to attack, right?
Yes.
Am I right about that? Yeah. And so that never happened. Like their Kraken fell apart. I mean, in Wisconsin, it was a dud. Pennsylvania, it was a dud. Georgia was a dud. Arizona was a dud. So we've never got to see this Kraken. And by the way, I don't know if anyone knows, but the Kraken in the mythology gets destroyed. Just like, you know, David and Goliath. Are they going to say next, we're going to unleash Goliath? Because David beats Goliath also. So I don't know. Just a little, I don't know if you want to keep using the Kraken thing. Anyway, but they're still saying it. We're going to unleash the Kraken. We're going to prove this, right? With these lawsuits. And so Mike Lindell, not to be outdone, decided to jump on this with some promotions. So you can get now, if you're lucky, you can get access to some MyPillow stuff by using a coupon code for Kraken. If you go to MyPillow.com, he's raising money for one of the speakers there actually mentioned this. I want to see if I can pull up this video here.
Please don't knock my pillow guy.
I know you're a big fan. I can't get this video over. Shoot, I thought I had it. I didn't download it. Darn
I
it.
Sleep so much better thanks to that, man. Like,
you do not have a MyPillow.
I don't.
By the way, they have like an F rating for customer feedback. But anyway, so there was a guy that was giving a speech at that event and said, guess what? You know, Mike Lindell is going to be speaking here at this event. And, you know, he's rolled out a new coupon code. So everyone here, I love his mattress toppers. I love his pillows. And you can get a percentage off right now if you use the coupon code Kraken. He literally was doing like a shill for people buying my pillows at one of these events. That's how many grifters are tying themselves to this garbage right now. So if you want some cheap pillows, they're already cheap enough. They're already crappy enough. Then throw on top of it a Kraken discount code so you can take advantage of it. So we're just getting some additional stimulus news right now, just coming in. So if you're joining us for the first time, welcome. We do this show live every day at 9 a.m. Eastern time. So please subscribe to our channel. We welcome you with open arms. This is the only progressive morning business show on the internet. We've got a live audience here. So we are live right now. Good to see all of you on this Monday morning. We are getting some breaking news on the stimulus front. If you tuned in late, we covered the stimulus at the beginning and how this is going to be separated out in two different bills this afternoon. But we are now learning that this is going to be released at 4 p.m. Eastern time. 4 p.m. Eastern time. Lawmakers will unveil this plan at 4 p.m. Eastern time. And this is a bipartisan group of congressmen and women that came together, four Democrats, four Republicans, for a $908 billion pandemic relief. But interestingly, though, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin is still working with Nancy Pelosi, like on a different track right now. So I'm not sure what's going on. I like to think that, okay, this $908 billion plan that we're going to learn about later today is the only one we need to deal with. But that's not the case. According to the latest reports, we may actually have a separate bill that will include $600 direct payments to individuals as well as $300 in unemployment, supplemental unemployment, and, sorry, direct payments. So $600 in direct payments could be a part of a separate bill that is unveiled by Steven Mnuchin and the White House. And it, so here's what's happening. Nancy Pelosi and the White House are like working on their own plan together. And then over here, we have this bipartisan bill of $908 billion that does not include direct stimulus checks. So who will win? I mean, government money, federal government runs out of money on December 18th. They will shut down Friday night. So Congress is running right now, trying to work on a full year $1.4 trillion spending bill by then, with pandemic relief attached to it. Good luck. But according to reports this morning, there will be two separate bills rolled out by this bipartisan group. One will include non-controversial items like schools, rental assistance, PPP money, money for transportation, etc. That's the non-controversial part of the bill, $700 billion worth. And then the other piece will be about $160 billion, and that will include state and local money, as well as liability protection for businesses. They're going to separate those out because they don't anticipate that that one may pass. Why are you lumping those together? Why not just break them out separately and let them stand on their own? Why not say, hey, we're going to put forth a bill that's for liability protection for businesses and see how many, do it as an up or down vote, right? That's it. That's the only piece of it. Let's see who votes for it. And then how about this? State and local money. Break that out as a separate piece. Let's see who votes for that. Why are we lumping those two things together? Infuriating. Again, they're not morally equivalent. As I pointed out earlier, if you joined us late here on the show, according to the Wall Street Journal, getting COVID vaccines to people will cost states billions that they don't have. Billions. Pennsylvania alone needs $9 billion just to get the vaccines distributed to people. They don't have swabs. They don't have all of this infrastructure to carry this, you know, the frozen storage containers and everything that they need to do to transport this stuff. Not to mention the healthcare workers they have to hire in order to distribute it. So again, 4 p.m. this afternoon, we will see a stimulus plan from the bipartisan group of lawmakers. We will have the full bill this afternoon by 4 o'clock. So we will bring that to you as soon as it's available. And then we'll also be watching the Mitch McConnell, Nancy Pelosi, Steven Mnuchin track on that side to see if we get stimulus checks and how that will unfold. And then I'm also going to be watching Bernie Sanders, who basically wants to hold the Senate hostage until they get stimulus checks, he and Josh Hawley. So there's a number of different things happening, and we're going to keep our eye on it. This is a huge week. The vaccine is rolling out today for the very first time to 3 million Americans. We are closing in right now within the hour. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if even by the end of this show, we hit this number of 300,000 people dead because of coronavirus in the United States. Just absolutely amazing. And here are the latest numbers right before the show. I pulled them up. 299,000. 191. And you think about, like, I think we've become numb to it. I mean, I hate to say it, but I feel like in some ways, that's what it feels like. We've become sort of numb to these numbers right now. You know, when we think about a 9/11 style attack in the United States, and 2,800 people killed on 9/11, and we transformed our entire society. You know, think about the airlines and the way we travel, everything. Being on no-fly lists and watch lists. I mean, take your shoes off at the airport. Can't travel with anything more than like tiny little bit of liquid. Oh, because 3,000 people were killed by a terrorist attack. We increased our military spending by billions, trillions actually, to fight foreign wars against because of 9/11. Think what we did. I mean, if you just think about how much money we've spent because of 9/11. Now imagine if we had that same sense of urgency to protect our citizens because of COVID and because of this pandemic and 300,000 Americans being killed. I just don't get how numb we are. I mean, am I wrong? Let me know in the chat. Am I wrong about this? Have we become numb to it or not? I feel like, you know, think about Pearl Harbor, 2,000 people killed in Pearl Harbor attack. We go to war as a result. We build an entire army and navy. We mobilize and build all kinds of tanks, Higgins boats in New Orleans so we can land on the beaches of Normandy because we were attacked at Pearl Harbor. And now we're having that same style attack on Americans every day. And we're quibbling over $1,200 checks or state and local money so that these local governments can distribute vaccines. I mean, it really is utterly mind-blowing. Meanwhile, billionaires are still making a lot of money, which is good news. I know you were really concerned about this.
Thank goodness.
And yes, you could become a more... I know you were... I know David was losing sleep last night about it. In fact, you texted me like in the middle of the night. You were in a hot, sweaty panic. And David said, I'm worried that billionaires are suffering. I said, just wait till the show this morning.
Yeah, but they are. I mean, they're...
And you'll have your confidence.
It's infuriating how bad they're suffering.
You'll have your confidence restored in a moment. Because GOP mega donors, billionaire Blackstone CEO Steve Schwarzman, has made huge increases in rent. Now, who is Steve Schwarzman? He's the world's largest landlord. He happens to be the billionaire who's the GOP's largest donors. He donates to Mitch McConnell, to Trump. He's been out there bragging about all of his success, making all these big profits off of huge increases in rents. Yeah, so he's been making tons of money over at Blackstone. No wonder their stock is doing so good. I'm surprised by that. He, at the conference, at the Goldman Sachs Financial Services Conference on December 9th, Blackstone's billionaire CEO, Steven Schwarzman, boasted that after the 2008 financial crisis, his firm was able to cash in on the mortgage crisis. At the time, the company was able to buy up foreclosed homes and convert them into rental properties, subsequently plagued by accusations of dilapidation and excessive fees. Yeah, so here's this guy, right? He goes and buys up all of these dilapidated homes and then doesn't have the contractors to fix them up, so they sat there dilapidated, rat-infested. I mean, they were falling apart. They couldn't find contractors. They didn't think that part through. Then they also thought that they could manage property management from afar, like from an office in Chicago, instead of being local to know like how much you charge for rent and how you deal with tenants and how you, all of that, maintenance requests, everything. They just thought they could, you know, because money could buy everything. They screwed up. So Schwarzman, as a top Republican donor, close ally of President Trump, indicated his firm is positioning itself right now for a very similar jackpot to 2008. Quote, you always have winners and losers. Blackstone was a huge winner coming out of the global financial crisis, and I think something similar is going to happen, he said. He said about half of the firm's earnings are from a real estate business. Just to give you some idea how this breaks, we pick the good neighborhoods, he says, if you will. Real estate has a lot of different sub-asset classes, and we've concentrated in logistics. It's about 36% of all real estate we own, and we are the largest owner of real estate in the private world. And that asset class has boomed with huge increases in rent. Almost no occupancies, rent collections from almost everyone. Blackstone has also been evicting residents during the pandemic. According to court filings by the Private Equity Stakeholder Project, Blackstone has faced a legal showdown with New York tenants at one of the city's largest rental complexes. They've reportedly kept even Manhattan's units empty rather than face rent control regulations. So this is how good these guys are, right? They're keeping, instead, where we have an affordable housing crisis in this country, right? We need housing for people. People are getting evicted. But Blackstone, in a lot of their units, instead of altering or keeping the price where they should be for rent control, they're just leaving them empty so no one can live in there.
Jeez.
For its part, Blackstone told the Daily Poster that the firm is not evicting people and that the only evictions have been, quote, matters of public nuisance and or risk to public health or public safety. Which is another way of saying eviction, because you can be evicted by public nuisance, risk to public health, or public safety. That can be one of the categories under which you evict somebody. So that's a pile of crap. During the Goldman Sachs conference, Schwartzman seemed to insinuate that his firm may buy up even more residential real estate to try to squeeze even more revenue out of renters if the pandemic-ravaged economy allows him. He says, quote, in the suburbs, for example, suburban residential has turned out to be quite a good place to be. When the cities get cheap enough, then you go back to doing that. So there's a lot of interesting things, and every part of the firm is really operating full. If you want to ask me in April, if you would have asked me in April whether anything like this would have been possible, I have to say no. Now they're buying up warehouse space to reap the rents off of these all these e-commerce businesses now. They're buying up everything, but they're buying up all these properties and they're jacking up the rents and they're evicting people. So this is a time when we need to really be raising rents and then going on a phone call and boasting about how you did it in 2008 and you're doing it again. And then people want to slam Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez for her new line of merchandise to raise money. It's called Tax the Rich. People want to make fun of her for that and say, how dare you?
And that to me,
she's wearing it. Look,
just structurally will
tax the rich. I saw a bunch of people in comments said, screw that. Screw tax the rich. How about eat the rich?
So we need a good old fashioned French Revolution.
America. We do. You know, I'm beginning to think, you know, I'm not a violent kind of guy. I'm not a moody guy either. You know, I don't like violence, but I think, and I'm not saying violence, but I think hostility, like a hostile takeover is what needs to happen for the people in America right now, for the workers, for the left, like to rise up and kick these corporate greed monsters out of the system.
Well, you know, like Kennedy
said, If
those who don't make peaceful protests possible make violent protests inevitable, and the way that they don't allow, mm-hmm. you know, they walk away from protests, they don't acknowledge it, they don't pay attention to what people are saying, eventually they have no choice but to start getting violent, to be heard.
Yeah, and then you see some of these Black Lives Matter protests and these, you know, Antifa protests that have turned violent, and you wonder why. I'm not condoning it. I'm not saying violence is the way. I'm saying hostility, overthrow a government. It doesn't have to be violent. Hey, they did it in Portugal in the 1970s. They threw out a dictator. They threw off the shackles of Salazar. Threw him out.
They kind of did
the
Carnation
Revolution.
In Iceland, when when they bailed out the people and they put the bankers mm-hmm. in jail and wrote a new constitution.
Exactly. Yeah, the only country that actually put people in jail for it. In the United States, these people get promoted to the White House cabinet. People that, during the financial crisis, were screwing people over, like Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, becomes a Treasury Secretary. And then look at the people that are going to be in Biden's cabinet. People from Blackstone, by the way. It all comes back. Raytheon, all of these big corporations, all get taken care of. They'll all be a part of this. So Goldman Sachs is a part of the White House. All these big billionaires, part of the White House. You know, I think that's what, you know, hostile takeover, a revolt. People to rise up and say enough is enough. How we don't have Medicare for all in this country. We don't have universal health care, which is something that Kennedy, you were going to talk about Kennedy. He was calling for it. Nixon wanted it. 50 years ago.
Well, the thing is, I think that we forget is there are way more of us than there are of them. And if we wanted to, if we actually could, you know, that's the problem is we're so divided by left and right. If we could come to the middle mm-hmm. for a while, and unite, there's nothing they could stop us from doing if we united together. But right now they just have us so divided, fighting over, you know, left versus right, identity politics.
You're right. And I think we have more in common than most people believe, most people think. Like if we were to all sit down and say, you know what, here's what I believe. I think because the way that's why words are so powerful. right? Because if I say to you, if I take the sort of Trumpian Republican talking point and say, you know, he voted against the military. It's like, no, what I actually voted against was an additional 25% increase in buying crap that we don't need. And I want to reallocate that money in schools, right? Most Americans would say, yeah, I don't think we need those jet aircraft. Like if they actually knew what it was being spent on. But the way it's all framed, it's all about framing. That's all politics is. It's framing. You know, Frank Luntz has written books on framing. There was another one by George, what's his name? I read it years ago on a Democrat, a liberal. So they can't think of an elephant, I think is the name of it. Like if I tell you, I think that was the name of the book. Don't think of an elephant. You're going to think of an elephant, right? You immediately, that picture is in your brain. So if I'm planting these seeds, it's all about the way we plant and have these discussions. It's all the way we use these words. And again, I come back to like the Clean Air Act as an example. It was a brilliant piece of like, I think it was George W. Bush legislation. This idea that the Clean Air Act was actually a rollback of environmental regulations. It was giving the ability to pollute more. But it was brilliant framing. Because now if I'm a Democrat and I vote against the Clean Air Act, who doesn't like clean air? But it wasn't actually for clean air. It was the opposite of clean air. They just called it the Clean Air Act. It's brilliant. So now can you imagine the commercials, the television commercials, you know, during a campaign? Clayton Morris voted against the Clean Air Act. What does he have against clean air? Vote for Sandra Day, blah, 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 blah.
Well, that's the problem that I have. That's one of the problems that I have right now with the progressives in the Democratic Party is that they don't push forward a Medicare for all bill and force the no votes on the people. When you have 70%+ of even Republicans wanting Medicare for all, why don't they force a no vote and do something like that?
Right. You know, the problem is it's the leadership. So the progressives who want those types of things, you know, an AOC, Bernie Sanders, et cetera, who want Medicare for all. Nancy Pelosi doesn't bring it to the floor, won't bring it out of committee.
Well, they're in a perfect position right now. That they could force her to do that because she's up for, you know, they could not approve her as speaker again. Use that as leverage.
Right. And there's been some rumblings that might happen, actually. Force her hand.
That would be amazing.
She has the leverage. She has the power. That would be game changer to see her forced out of power. But I think you're right. Like, I think we all want these things if it's understood how they operate. Right. If I was to sit down. If I was to sit down with like an 80 or 60 year old Trump supporter who the only thing the only issue that they care about is like this idea of immigration or, you know, I don't want people telling me that I can't, you're going to touch my gun, et cetera. All of that. Those are all just like identity politics issues that don't ever change. That run on abortion, right? All of that stuff. Nothing changed. It's not going to change. It hasn't changed in the Supreme Court, regardless of a conservative Supreme Court. So stop running on that. But if I was to sit down with one of these Trump supporters and say, do you think that Americans should have access to health care? I think most of them say, yeah. Do you think that we should have good education in our country? Yeah. Do you think that our children should have to pay $60,000, $70,000 in student loan debt for the next 30 years? They'd say no. You know, it's all about framing. But when you say, oh, you want free public college, like, who's going to pay for that? Well, let me explain. We don't have to spend $800 billion a year on bombs.
Well, and that's usually the argument.
Attacked on 9/11?
One of the only arguments I ever hear for Medicare for All is we can't afford it. When it actually saves us money over 10 years than the current system.
Right, like, right.
What,
that's
$10
billion
or something?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like 10 or 12 billion.
Because that's the only argument I've ever heard against it. Have you ever heard another argument against it from conservatives?
No, other than we're going to be like a socialized country. No, yeah. How can we afford that? We can't afford that. Oh, okay. Keep telling ourselves that. And we can continue to build aircraft carriers because that's vital. you know, one of the interview pieces that came out last night, I thought this question, I want to play this because this was at President Trump being interviewed by Brian Kilmeade over on Fox and Friends at the Army Navy game. And I thought this was stunning. The one of the, not surprising, but this is how, it's just one of those like throwaway questions. And we all sort of sit back. If you're like a Fox viewer and you're all sort of sitting back, you're like, yeah, good for him for doing that. Like he did. Yeah, he's taking care of our military. Right. Like I come from a military family. My brother served in Iraq. My father was in the army, you know, took over a Nazi barracks in Nuremberg in Germany. You know, so like I come from a military background when it's, you know, and I fully support it when it's necessary. You know, we're attacked like we were on Pearl Harbor. We mobilized. But just in perpetuity? No. So here's this question from Brian Kilmeade about our standing army. And he frames it like, you know, man, you were just handed a pile of crap.
Roosevelt, 1901. There's only been two other presidents that have shown up for an Army-Navy game. Truman and Bush. You're the third. Why are you here?
Well, I love football, but I love these two teams, and they're special, and they've been to the White House, and we've given them awards because, you know, it's always the Commander-in-Chief Award. One of them's going to get it.
Right.
And I've had a lot of fun, and the coaches are terrific people.
You, of everything you accomplished, you took over a military that was cut by 25%.
Yeah.
Oh, horrible. Oh, horrible. It was cut by 25%. That's just terrible. How do we even get out of bed in the morning?
That only had three brigades ready to fight and was out of bullets.
Only three brigades ready to fight. Only three brigades. Let me just look at the number on this. Yeah. So as I was looking last night, a brigade, by the way, is 5,000 soldiers. Three brigades ready to fight. We only had 15,000 people ready to fight. We only had 15,000 people that were ready immediately to go into action and attack. Meanwhile, we were attacked on Pearl Harbor with a fraction of that, and we were able to mobilize in a matter of months and be up to speed, building Higgins boats, a flotilla, an army.
You realize how much more efficient our military would be if they were focused their efforts here and only defended here? And if something happened, how focused they could be? We're spread out so thin all over the world that, you know, if something were to actually happen that was going to attack this country, I mean, it's like, oh, get them all back from the Middle East. Like, what the, oh no.
Yeah, have a 600 bases around the world.
Oh, it's
hey,
900.
Get the 900 guys that are in, oh yeah, 900, yeah, excuse me. 900 bases around the world. Hey, can you get the 900 guys that are in Somalia? We're going to need those 900. What about the 4,000 that are still in Afghanistan or 8,000? Let's bring, you know, four of those. I mean, come on. And the ships that are scattered all around the world, but a brigade. Oh, how did you do it? You know, there was only three brigades that are ready to fight at a moment's notice. And we're supposed, and, you know, if you're a Fox viewer, you're sitting back, you're like arms crossed. You're like, yeah, that is ridiculous. Only three brigades and they were out of bullets.
You know, I loved what General Petraeus, I think, no, it wasn't him. I can't remember the general that said it, but he said, if you're a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. And it's like, we've got so much money going into our military that to justify those costs, they have to look for something to do with the military. And the only thing we do is fight. We don't do anything good with our military. Like, it's not like they're over there rebuilding houses and helping feed people or anything like that. It's not actually a global force for good. It is a global force for decimation. And so like everything that we do is violent with the military. So I think that was a good analogy. It's we're the hammer and everything's the nail.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great analogy. And yeah, imagine if we had, I mean, look, I know there's a lot of stuff that we did in Iraq and building, but like, why are we doing it in the first place? Why were we even there in the first place? We destroyed the place. So yeah, that's why we're building, you know, over there building bridges and different things like that. But that's not what they're meant to be used for. But imagine if we, yeah, mobilized in the United States, like a civilian, you know, engineering corps, like we did during World War II, built roads and bridges. Like, why are we building bridges in Afghanistan? when our bridges are crumbling in the United States. It's all out of whack.
But that's Halliburton, though. Is that it, when those guys, I'm just curious, when those guys get those contracts like Halliburton, does the military help them rebuild? Or is that, do they send over contractors like, you know, like regular workers to build the bridges? Because military people don't really have that skill.
Yeah, but there were a lot of like military liaison contractors that worked within the military. But you're right. It was like, we're going to just pay Halliburton to do it. But there was like some, and there was definitely military engineers that helped with some of the infrastructure in Iraq specifically, especially in like Baghdad and places. But yeah, mostly it was just like us paying them billions of dollars. And oh, by the way, Dick Cheney happens to be the vice president, you know, like all those guys make so much money. Hey, we're going to go into this war and all my buddies here, all my cronies are just going to make a ton of money. How's that sound? And that's why they continue these perpetual wars. I mean, imagine if they had the same motivation to do that in the United States. Like you said, imagine if there was that much money in actually preventative medicine, or imagine if we could like monetize the things that are good for us, right? But instead we don't. We have advertising on television for junk food. Do you ever see commercials for broccoli? You know, it's like we're all out of whack. We're upside down. And it's absolutely time for a change. I would love to hear your thoughts. Please drop me a comment here. Be sure to subscribe. I know we had a lot of people here today, so thank you so much. We're going to have another show this afternoon. As soon as we get this bill up and running from the Senate, from this bipartisan group, we will bring it to you. What is in the stimulus plan? We will bring you the news this afternoon and bring you up to date on all of the things stimulus and how it will affect you. Again, a couple of different lines here. Bernie Sanders with direct stimulus checks. Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell, or Steven Mnuchin on that side. And then, of course, this new bipartisan bill on this side that is going to be rolled out here in probably in a few hours. So we will bring all of that to you. Thank you guys so much for subscribing. Just very easy to subscribe. Doesn't cost you anything. And turn on that little bell notification so you'll be notified as soon as we publish a new video. Thank you, David. Thank you to all of you for watching. Thank you, Grover, for being passed out the whole show and only barking during one part of the show, which was this Trump rally and our favorite singers, the Deplorables.
We're America.
Vote for Trump.
Just living the dream.
Vote for Trump.
Sing it.
My ears.
Real women, vote for Trump. We don't need no liberal chump. Yeah, real women.
If you light a lighter, Clayton. I swear.
Amen.
Real women vote for Trump.
I'm sorry. I had to. Bye-bye, everyone.
Smash that like button.
Smash it.